Welcome to Second Nature, a brand new media platform providing context and analysis on the business of outdoor. My name is Dylan Bowman, and every week I'll be joined by my good friend and co-host Aaron Lutze for long-form conversations about what's going on in the outdoor action and endurance sports business landscape. I'm a longtime pro athlete and creator. Lutze is also an athlete. He's a sports marketing legend, formerly working at Red Bull, Aura, and Abbott. He's also a creator himself, and together we do basically nothing but converse about what's happening in the industry. We talk on the phone for hours every week about what's going on in the space, and we felt we might as well take some of those ideas and some of those conversations and share them publicly. So after a couple years of ideation, we're finally getting it going. Second Nature. Second Nature is starting as a podcast and newsletter, but we have some pretty big ambitions for the future of what this could become. In episode one, we talk about the business of further Lululemon's massive brand campaign as they enter the running market. We also talk about the history of Under Armour and the return of Kevin Plank as CEO and what that might mean for the brand and the industry. We end the show with what will become a consistent closing segment that we're calling Brand Product Content, where Aaron and I will share something from among those three categories that we noticed during the week that's relevant to outdoor action or endurance sports. We felt like this was a good start. We expect to get a lot better as we build consistency, but we'd love it if you would be among the earliest adopters. Make sure you subscribe to Second Nature on your favorite podcast player. Subscribe to our YouTube channel and also to our newsletter, which you can find at secondnature.media. You can find links to all those various platforms in the show notes of today's episode. Next week, we're going to go deeper on the short and long-term vision for the brand, what we're trying to create. We're excited to give you a sense of where we're headed. But for now, I hope you enjoy episode one, and thanks so much for listening. Okay, welcome to episode one of Second Nature. My name is Dylan Bowman, here with my friend and mentor and co-host, Mr. Aaron Lutze. Lutze, we're finally doing it, buddy. Episode one.
We're doing it. This is happening. This is exciting. I'm fired up, man.
Yeah, so we're going to go deeper into the vision and the future of Second Nature in our next episode. But in a nutshell, what Aaron and I are trying to accomplish is express our passion for the industry. We're both lifelong, I think, members of the outdoor industry professionally, as athletes, as on the brand side, as content creators, media operators. We talk about this stuff on the phone all the time, and now we're finally recording some of these conversations to share them out in podcast format. Today, we're going to talk about two stories that are in the news right now in the outdoor industry. The first is the Lululemon Further event, and then the second is the return of Kevin Plank as CEO of Under Armour. Lutze, starting with Further, this was a six-day ultramarathon for 10 Lululemon ambassadors with the simple, elegant goal of going further than they had ever run in the past. It also put a heavy emphasis on sports science and gathering data to push women's sport forward. I think they did it in partnership with the Canadian Sports Science Institute or some major institution like that. I know they're going to be publishing research papers about what data they collected over the next couple of years. But I wanted to start with the planning process. Obviously, you've worked on the brand side with one of the biggest, coolest brands in the world, that being Red Bull. You were on the inside coming up with ideas like this and bringing them to life. So starting from there, talk a little bit about how ideas like this are pitched internally and any flavor you can add about the planning and execution process that you think Lululemon confronted.
Here's a question to start. You would know the answer to this probably better than anyone. Is this the only ultra marathon with a 100% finisher rate?
I guess it could be. I mean, there's definitely ultra marathons with 100% not finishing rates, but yeah.
This is the other end of the spectrum. Yeah. Honestly, just looking through the stats of all the people that participated in it, incredible. I mean, 6 days of running the same loop and that many miles. I mean, everybody made it in over 100 miles. Like, that's incredible. So first of all, respect to everybody that participated, because I mean, obviously Camille blasted a bunch of records and stuff, but everybody that did it broke, you know, their own records or pushed themselves further, as the title of the event is. What's really interesting to think about this event, and, you know, to put the brand X-ray glasses on of like, how did they do this? How do we reverse engineer? How do we think about those first few meetings that they had to present this concept? The thing that I'm most interested to know the answer to would be, what is the original idea? Was this an activation for women's International Women's Day? Was this something for the release of a product? Was this their entrance into trail running? There's a lot of questions of like, you kind of wonder, what was the thing that they were actually trying to do? Because a lot of times you come up with a singular idea and then you kind of work backwards from there and you add on all these different layers. It's always interesting to see how an idea comes together. There's this idea of sort of like, we want this outcome, and how do we reverse engineer to get that outcome? So did it start as, we're releasing this line, wouldn't it be cool if we did this thing? And then, you know, they added in extra elements, like for sure having someone break world records from the outside of the sport. That's a really crazy thing. Inside the sport, I don't know if that's necessarily the thing that gets people excited, but it's definitely a point that Lululemon can point to and say like, haha, we broke all these world records. And that adds more interest. It adds more hook. It adds a lot more to, you know, the story that they tell afterwards. So you really have to think about, what was their motivation? What were they trying to do? And what was the first pitch to get there? I can tell you from the Red Bull perspective, like, it's not always a straight line. And in fact, from the original pitch to execution on so many of these projects, it's kind of like a giant game of telephone where you start with this idea. And if it comes out anywhere close to that by the end, it's a miracle. So you have no idea where this whole thing started. Sometimes these ideas, if you're familiar with South Park, the Underpants Gnomes episode, where it's like, step one, steal everybody's underpants. Step two, step three, profit. And so there's always sort of like this guess of like, what was the original intention? What was the metric that they're actually trying to hit in the end? And that's the thing that I've been kind of trying to kind of unravel here, to try to figure out, is it something for the actual product itself? Because some of the stuff that they used in the event isn't even available yet.
Yeah. So the question is then, is this brand marketing or product marketing, right? And from my perspective, it's a brand move. And the ultimate goal, if we did want to reverse engineer it, is probably, we, Lululemon, want to be an authentic running brand. And we only have so many opportunities to continue to grow this massive business that we've created. What are some of the adjacent categories where we can take market share from our competitors, where we can introduce new products that we can sell to new consumers and therefore grow our top line and our bottom line? And then you reverse engineer it and think, well, we're Lululemon. We should probably start with women. Let's recruit a world-class ultra running team of women. They have good athletes in track and field. They now have good athletes in ultra marathon racing. And this is something that we could maybe come back to, is like, if you're going to try and play in the run market here in 2024, you not only need to have exposure to the road and track side of running, but if you want to be relevant, even if you're not profitable in the trail sector, in order to be a relevant running brand, you have to have trail product, and probably you need to have trail or ultra marathon focused athletes if you want to be relevant in running the industry as a whole. And then understanding that you're going to recruit this world-class team of ultra marathon focused women, then you pair it with International Women's Day at the same time. So starting with the goal of, we want to move into a new category to continue to grow this business, which is absolutely on fire globally right now. We are, in all likelihood, whatever, I don't know the percentage of sales that comes from female consumers versus male consumers, but you would guess that it's significantly weighted to the female audience. And therefore, it makes sense to start with a women's team, pairing it with International Women's Day and pushing sports science and women's sport forward are two noble goals to enhance the messaging and have it cut through a little bit more in this noisy world. So one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is the challenge of becoming an authentic brand in an adjacent category. How do you go from being a yoga and athleisure focus brand like Lululemon, and they have owned that category. In fact, they sort of invented that category. How do you go from that and try and be successful in running?
It's a great question. And, you know, I'm kind of curious to see, did it work? I thought about this a lot of what would Hoka have done in this environment? What would Wazelle have done in this environment? And did Lululemon actually do enough to engage ultra running in the right way or trail running in the right way? Will you see any of those shoes on the start line of Western States? Like, was they did the Lululemon version of this record breaking thing? Absolutely. It was true to their brand. So, you know, the question you asked earlier, is it brand or is it product marketing? I think definitely it was brand marketing. It was their way to kind of like show up there. But it's got to be this fine line of making it accessible beyond the trail running scene to a wider audience, because I don't know if trail runners are going to be running out to pick up these shoes, but we had to make it, or they had to make it cool enough so that it was relevant to a wider audience. It's a fine line to walk too, because what message do you actually want to send about these shoes, about this gear? It is for everyone. It is for people that just want to challenge themselves to run 1 mile beyond where they've run so far. And I think that's probably 99.999% of the people that are going to buy these shoes. Like I said, I don't think these shoes are going to show up at the start line of any major ultra marathon in the future. So it's kind of interesting to see, like, where does this actually land in terms of credibility within the scene? And is that important? Is that a key performance indicator for Lululemon when it comes down to this event? Like, what's actually important when we reverse engineer this out? Is it just about establishing themselves even further within running, which I think it does, credibility and like the ultimate, you know, trail running and ultra space?
Yeah. Let's come back to the footwear in a minute. You introduced a concept into my brain just this week called a thunderclap, and this may not be the textbook definition of a thunderclap, but what they did successfully is they owned the zeitgeist in running for an entire week. They swallowed every ounce of attention that was going into the sport of running for 6 full days. And that alone has got to be massively valuable if it's hard to quantify. Any comments on that?
Absolutely. So the concept of a thunderclap is when you have a lot of people over multiple social media accounts. So say you take your entire athlete roster and have them essentially post about the same exact thing. And effectively, like the sound of a thunderclap, it's unavoidable. If you're within the area anywhere, it's unavoidable that you're going to hear this thunderclap. And that's exactly, you know, it is actually a pretty good correlation here to what this was. If you're in the running space, if you follow one or maybe two of these people or Lululemon or anybody else that they work with, there's no way you can avoid it. And then that continues to ripple beyond. For example, you posted about it on your newsletter and in LinkedIn and all these different places too. So the media value of it definitely expands. That also goes into sort of the media model that a lot of these brands work with. It's called the PESO model. So PESO stands for paid, earned, shared, owned. And anytime you're working on your KPIs, key performance indicators of an event or a project or really any activity and activation that you're doing in a brand, you're thinking about the outcome of the PESO model. So paid, you know, obviously is a lot of the stuff that you're putting out there that you're paying to promote. Earned is all the media and all the people that are talking about all that stuff. Shared is essentially the overlap of you and your ambassadors that are sharing this content out, all your partners. And then owned, that's like Lululemon's content that they own and they can put on their YouTube channel, all that kind of stuff. So it really goes into the earned. You delivered them some earned media wins. So there you go. Nice work.
Wow. Yeah, but you know, just, okay, so now let's tie this to the footwear point, like sort of where we started, right? Lululemon did $8 billion in revenue in 2023. They've got almost a $60 billion market cap. Their stock is up 60% in the last 12 months. When you're that big, when you have that type of momentum, your shareholders don't just sit back and pat you on the back and say, good job, great effort. You have to continue to grow. And that's sort of the reality of being a publicly traded company like Lululemon. So the question is, how do we grow? You move into other sectors, other categories. So in this case, branching into running, which does make sense, right? Because I'm sure they know through consumer research that a lot of the people who bought their tights, their leggings, their shorts, their shirts, used those products doing other activities, not just going to the office, going to the gym, going to their yoga class, but likely also when they're going out running. Then, you know, obviously, you want to offer new and different SKUs of products to a new consumer as you move into that category. Enter footwear. And there's been so many examples of brands who've really struggled developing footwear when they're really successful in the apparel market. The North Face is a good example. Obviously, I ran for the North Face for a long time, and they have good footwear product now, but it took them a long time to get there, and many years, and probably a lot of wasted money. And so it's a massive investment for Lululemon at the same time to introduce footwear as a brand that has only been known for apparel up until this point in their history. But this is all part of the plan of the executive team in all likelihood, and the shareholders and the board of, like, we need to continue to grow. We've got Aloe Yoga coming up behind us along with many other disruptive brands. So my question was going to be sort of along those lines of, like, when you lose focus on your core market, like, what danger could Lululemon potentially get in with this pivot to running? Because to me, it seems like, you know, the brand is on fire right now. They can almost do nothing wrong. They're coming off one of the most successful marketing campaigns that I can remember in my history in the sport. But are they in danger of losing focus on their main market?
I really don't think so. And the reason why, I said this to you last night, but there was an article that released that was, I think actually it was like one of their corporate earnings statements where they talk about all the things that are their priorities. And like you said, last year they had this crazy year. They were like ahead of their 2024 profit projections and all this stuff. And they talked about some of the future stuff that they're working towards. One of those things is this sort of head-to-toe ecosystem, right? Of being able to deliver everything. And I really think I would challenge the idea that this is even really based on running specifically. It's more about giving people a head-to-toe option, and so they can have the full kit head-to-toe. And running is obviously part of that. But just like you said, people wear yoga pants and do other things besides yoga. And I think that what Lululemon has created here, running is sort of an ancillary benefit to those shoes. I mean, sure, I'm sure they work great for running far, but I don't think they necessarily unlock anything extra. I mean, you know, the new shoes that they launched at this Further event didn't even have a carbon plate in them. So they're not necessarily like, you know, the next level. It's not like the carbon Hoka release or the Breaking 2 shoe or any of that kind of stuff. It's just a great pair of shoes. And so I think it's more like they're probably not losing focus because they're just focused on the head to toe. Running is another way for them to message a different audience and for them to be relevant there. And so this is sort of like a, like you said, it's like into a brand launch, and it's a way to message this new group of consumers that maybe they haven't been as relevant with so far. But what I would say is that this Further event definitely costs a lot of money to execute. Yeah. And the good part about that, other than the fact that some ultra runners got paid, I'm sure quite handsomely, is that you can tell that Lululemon is actually pretty serious about pursuing this. It's not just a one-off, like, yeah, great, let's try this. They're pretty serious about the strategy. They brought Simon Atkins over from Adidas. That guy had been at Adidas for 25 years on the brand team. And he is one of the heaviest hitters from Adidas. And I'm sure there are plenty of other people that have joined Lululemon in the last couple of years for this mission. So you can tell by the resources they're putting against it that they're not just dabbling in this space. It will be really telling to see what do they follow up further with, because this was a really great kind of first project. And you know, the product has done its thing and everything else is up and to the right for Lululemon. What will be the next thing that they do? They can't just do further and then be like, we're good. So that'll be, I'll be really curious to see.
If you had to guess, how much do you think this costs?
All in? I mean, I honestly couldn't even guess. I'd say probably in the $5 million range.
I'm just gonna guess, that's 10.
Again, like, yeah, but it's also like, do you also include all the product development? Do you include right. all the research? Do you include?
I was thinking just for the production and the promotion and, you know, engaging the event rental agencies and the production agencies and things like that. I mean, the development of the actual product is another story. But on that subject, the development of the product, I mean, if you are going into the footwear game, it pretty much couldn't go any better than having one of your marquee athletes, that being Camille Heron, setting 12 world records in a shoe that may or may not even be available yet. Is it?
I think the shoe is available. A lot of the apparel and gear was custom made for the event. That was the one thing that I thought was sort of a miss, was that you can't buy all that stuff right away, or some of it was bespoke for the mm-hmm. event and for the athletes specifically. I would have loved to have seen them say like, hey, this event is over and you can buy, like, the Runzy that they put together is kind of an interesting thing. I mean, I obviously wouldn't be able to wear it, but it's cool. Like, it looks like they really put a lot of thought into developing this product, and for it, some of the stuff is coming in the fall, but there's a lot of stuff that they created that's not even available and no plan to be available, which seemed like kind of a miss to me. I would have tried to sell every last thing that was used for the event.
Yeah, could you imagine? I mean, they probably, if they had inventory, wouldn't have been able to hang on to it throughout the course of those 6 days. But yeah, that's the question, right? So if this was a brand marketing play, they then have to follow up with the product marketing and make those pieces available for all of those who were influenced during the 6 day extravaganza, myself included. In fact, I think I have one of those tan hoodies coming my way after that article that you referenced that I wrote for our newsletter. Another thing I wanted to ask you about is like the brand and the marketing around this. Like, obviously you're an expert here, former Red Bull marketer of the year, but I just think the whole idea of further is elegant. It's simple. It's relatable, where Camille Heron's going after these world records, but the other 9 members of the team are just basically going out there with the simple goal of let's go further than we ever have in our lives. And I feel like that is a message that can cut through. What's your opinion on just like the story and the name even of further and how they executed against it?
They've got a lot of opportunity to tell even more stories from this. The entire angle of the research that they did with the Canadian team, for example. I mean, that's a whole story that needs to exist. And, you know, that's, I think, one of the questions too. What are you going to do with all this information? What are you going to do with the data? Where does this actually go? And I really hope they tell that story for those of us that are, you know, we care about that kind of stuff. I mean, a Red Bull example would be Red Bull Stratos, right? Like, huge, audacious goal of jumping out of space, and also broke a ton of records in the process, not just from how many people watched it, but broke the free fall record, broke the fastest, you know, descent, all these different things. And again, there was a huge amount of people that were invested in it for the actual science, and that information was used for all manner of different things. For example, astronaut spacesuits are made differently because of Red Bull Stratos. There's this whole protocol on how to, you know, basically have a high altitude bailout, I guess, because of Red Bull Stratos. And so it'll be really interesting to see what do they do with that information? How do they tell that story? But the flip side of it too is, you know, you think about a brand like Nike, right? They've been invested in all kinds of different sports that do all these like really incredible things, from skateboarding, snowboarding, basketball, golf, with like the marquee people. But the product that actually sells the most is the everyday person. Like the women's walking shoe outsells LeBron's shoe like 100 to 1. And so, you know, what, you know, all this stuff is to bolster what they're doing and all these other things. And this is sort of the bright, shiny object that they're putting out there, which is an interesting approach. And so I think that they can take that further message and use that and make that the campaign for the entire year if they wanted to, and encourage everyone to kind of take themselves and push themselves further.
So interesting. And on the subject of breaking too, that being kind of a counterexample from a rival brand, if you think of breaking too, right, it was Kipchoge and two of his other colleagues, East African shred monsters, right? There wasn't the same type of relatability, right? Like, I'm never running sub two. I can see, though, the effectiveness of like this innovation that we've brought to footwear is the only reason why this guy can run under 2 hours in the marathon. But at the same time, it's not super relatable. It's really fun for sports fans like you and I. But for a general consumer, does it really touch them? Whereas here with Further, yes, Camille Herron is the analog to Eliud Kipchoge. She is an absolute monster. It's hard to relate to somebody like that. But behind her, there's the story of like, I'm going further than I ever have. You know, there was one of the Lululemon athletes who only started running last year. I think she ran her first 5K 12 months ago, and she clipped off 188 miles in 6 days. And so you could see, you know, a 22-year-old female consumer who's maybe, you know, looking for something new in her life or a way to get back in shape or to get healthy or was hungry for a new goal, to see that example and be like, oh, that brand, that person, that product resonates with me. So I don't know. I just felt like it was really smart from a marketing angle to lean into both the like high performance innovation story, but also like the super relatable, let's just go further than we ever have story.
I think if you look at where they did the event itself, I mean, if your goal was only to go further, you probably could have picked a better
spot.
You could have gone to that
on my podcast, right? Yeah.
But if you were trying to be as relatable as possible and do it in the Lululemon way, you did it in a place that was infinitely Instagrammable. So it's this fine balance of trying to stay on brand, but also trying to knock down this like incredible goal. And it's interesting to see how those two things fit together, because you could have gone either way with it. And they sort of tried to thread the needle between the two, I think.
So I want to sort of finish this conversation by talking about the Instagram ability. But before we get there, I just want to sort of flag one thing. And that is, you and I have been talking about expansion out of one category into another. And I think this will be a running theme on our show and in a lot of our conversations, is the benefit of going hyper niche versus going broad. And anyway, I think there may be examples of that later in today's episode and in future episodes. So I just wanted to flag that. On the media side, this is squarely in your wheelhouse. So I just wanted to tee you up. From my perspective, it seemed like there were a few legacy media outlets that were incorporated into the coverage of this event, but otherwise it was mostly covered by YouTubers, Instagrammers, TikTokers, people who have large personal followings, or just sort of more new age, smaller, nimbler media entities. I know this is your hobby horse. So say a little bit about the strategy. If you were working on the marketing team for Lululemon, who you would enlist to help share this as far and wide as possible?
I think they're pretty smart to reach out to influencers, to reach out to content creators, because those people bring audiences, but more importantly, communities with them. And it feels like a more intimate thing when you're experiencing an event through the eyes of someone that you have been following and that you're a part of their community. Where when it's a media outlet, you know, we were talking about this before of like, who wrote an article about this and who was at the event writing an article about this. And there are all the places are going to cover it almost no matter what. All of the main media outlets, the legacy media outlets, no matter what, will probably post some level of stuff. So why not take advantage of the fact that you could bring people in, give them that really high touch experience, and let them tell their communities about this thing, make it feel more intimate. And that seems to match Lululemon. It seems to match the way that they designed the event to be Instagrammable and all these different things. And it seems like also they probably have a lot more control. Because think about it this way. If you're bringing in influencers, you're bringing in content creators, you're likely covering their expenses. You're maybe paying them as a partnership. That means you also have a discussion about what your deliverables are going to be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can't do that with Runner's World. You can't ask them for deliverables. You can't guide them towards that. You can't do, I don't know, maybe you can do collab posts, but like probably not. And so I think also it opens the door for Lululemon to reach beyond and you know, interact with these communities in a pretty intimate way, but with a little bit more control than they would have had. Because you could have come to this event and, you know, said whatever you wanted if you were a legacy media outlet, if you got paid to come to this event, or I'm guessing, I don't know if anybody got paid or not, but I would assume Lululemon probably made it pretty nice for everybody that did show up to it. You're probably a little bit more motivated to, you know, say nice things, put a good spin on it. I don't know.
So maybe let's wrap this part up about, like, if you have any comments about what maybe they could have done better, some places where they missed. I know you already mentioned something, but maybe I'll just get us started here. To me, it felt like the obvious opportunity that wouldn't have added a lot of complication or extra expense would have been to incorporate some sort of a live stream of this whole thing. Like, I was kind of surprised that there wasn't a YouTube page where you could just, you know, turn it on and check it out and even keep it on as background noise for a couple of hours. And in today's day and age, especially in trail and ultra running, that is sort of the status quo in order to be a relevant event. Obviously, they were massively impactful across social media, but it felt like they could have had some sort of a YouTube presence too. And the thing that's been so powerful in trail and ultra running there is the chat and just people engaging over the course of many days on Lululemon's owned YouTube channel. And again, I wouldn't have added a lot of complication, but it reminds me of during the pandemic, my family, we would convene for happy hours on occasion and just get on Zoom, and we would all log on to a YouTube channel that was just a live stream of an owl's nest who had just laid some eggs. And every evening, the mother owl would go out and get food and come back and feed. And it was our way during the pandemic of like all coming together as a family. But there was also like thousands of people watching this live broadcast at a time. So it doesn't have to be this super entertaining thing in order for people to tune in. In other words, like if they were just broadcasting this for 6 days, I bet they would have had millions of extra impressions.
Agreed. Agreed. I mean, interestingly enough, the comments are turned off for their YouTube videos about the event. I think that's kind of interesting too. Yeah, I think if we really take a step back, I mean, it's easy to play out what I like to call success theater, where you just look at the best indicators of we did this, we got this good feedback, we got this good feedback. Brands are excellent at doing the internal recap and skipping out like the misses, which is who knows how, you know, what the internal looks like at Lulu for that. One of the things I read from Sarah Lavender Smith, she was talking about how they completely missed having somebody, you know, an older woman running there. And I've got to imagine, you know, you made a point earlier about the people who have the most purchasing power. I've got to imagine like that not being represented was kind of a miss. And surely there's somebody in the running space that has a following that could have been part of this from that side of things, especially if you're doing research on women and running. That seems like a pretty big category that I'm not really sure. You know, there could be a number of things. They may have had somebody and that person dropped out and they just like, you know, didn't say anything about it, or maybe it was just an oversight. I think that would have been a really interesting thing because pretty much everybody on there, yeah, they were a bit younger. I think, you know, maybe 43, 44 was the oldest, but would have been interesting to maybe see that. I thought that was fair criticism of the event. Yeah, I don't know. I just found myself asking like it's that perfect line between like, is this brand, is this product? I think it's squarely in the brand side of things. If it was product marketing and you were just going for the, you know, the shoe launch to get people excited about it in that distance space, I think you would have seen things go different. Again, like what would Hoka have done in this case? Probably different location, probably more focus on like, did we make something that actually unlocks high performance, or did we just like put people out for 6 hours or 6 days and hope that, you know, hope for the best, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, shout out to Lulu. I mean, we ended the conversation by just poking a few holes, but overall massive success for the brand and hyper entertaining. And just as somebody who knows a few of these women personally and who followed along throughout the course of the 6 days, the universal consensus was that it was totally life-changing. I mean, the thing that was plastered across Instagram were things about like how the, I don't have any words, you know, this is beyond language. This was a completely soul-shattering, life-changing, beautiful event in my life. And I think those are things that only happen to each of us a few times. And I'm sure it'll be very hard to recreate for Lululemon, for their athletes, or for any other brand. So a huge success. Moving on, Lutzi, you want me to give you the quick 2 minutes on Kevin Plank and Under Armour, and we can talk about the implications there?
Tell me everything about Kevin Plank.
Okay, so I've been interested in this brand for a long time because I was a very early adopter. Kevin Plank was a football player at the University of Maryland, and he made these sort of skin-tight compression t-shirts, long sleeve and short sleeve, that were made to be worn underneath your football pads. And then it quickly evolved to being worn underneath lacrosse pads. As you know, Lucy, I was a lacrosse kid growing up, so... And I lived in Colorado, so we needed layers for a lot of the season as a spring sport. And the Under Armour long sleeve tees were the ideal product, right? Because it's skin tight, it's form fitting. You can put your elbow pads over the top of it. So I was an early adopter and have sort of been following the brand ever since. So again, Kevin Plank was a football player and sort of spun it out after college, and I think, you know, sort of struggled for the first several years. And reading a little bit about the history, it seems like the turning point for the brand came in 1999, where Plank, evidently, the story goes, the legend goes, that he got all of his employees to agree to not take a salary for a few weeks so that they could buy a $25,000 ad in ESPN, the magazine. Again, this is 1999, how things have changed. That ad evidently resulted in $1 million of sales and sort of was the instantaneous, you know, change maker for the brand that sort of put them on the map. And then, of course, because a lot of teams and team sport athletes are reading ESPN, the magazine, they become sort of the early adopters and the major evangelists of the brand. They eventually reach $1 billion in annual revenue for the first time in 2010. So you can see in 11 years, they went hockey stick, basically. And then in the 2010s, like the 2000 teens, they started buying apps, and everybody viewed it as a sort of revolutionary moment for performance brands. And this is when I think brands like Nike and Adidas started looking over their shoulders at this Maryland-based disruptor in Under Armour. It's debatable about whether or not those acquisitions were successful. I think most people agree they weren't. They eventually divested of all those apps. It was like Map My Run, Map My Fitness, Map My Ride, et cetera.
They took a bath on that. Right. They lost like $100 million. Right.
So, but at the time, you know, it was thought of as revolutionary of like, oh, people are starting to use this technology to record their exercise. This is in the pre-Strava days. What if we can develop a relationship with those athletes while they're out recording their exercise and then use that digital platform to help sell them product? Seems kind of brilliant, right? Like I could see myself getting excited and spending $1 billion on that if I had access to that type of resource. Like you said, it seemed to go the opposite direction. I think they divested of all those assets in like 2020 or something like that. Before that, Kevin Plank ended up resigning in 2019 as CEO, though he stayed on as the chairman of the board. I think he's still the majority shareholder of the company here, whatever, 25 years later. And then the next CEO only lasted about 2 years. He eventually left in 2022. And then they brought on a woman named Stephanie Linhartz, who is a former Marriott executive. So came from sort of the hospitality world. So sort of an interesting fit, didn't have a lot of experience in the apparel or footwear market, but was clearly very successful in her career. She abruptly stepped down last week. Plank reasserts himself or returns as the CEO, obviously as the founder of the brand after being away for 5 years. So I wanted to sort of tee you up on this. Like, what does it mean for Under Armour? The brand's sort of been struggling now for a few years, and any other sort of responses or reactions as you saw the news come across the wire last week?
Yeah. So Kevin Plank has 65% control over the company right now, over the shares. So still substantially a majority stakeholder. I have a lot of thoughts on this. I think, you know, a lot of things have happened around Kevin Plank, but one of the things is that he's kind of dropped the ball on, and he's been late to the party on a lot of stuff over the course of his career. And athleisure was one of those where he completely missed the mark, and then Lululemon basically ate his lunch. There was a point where, you know, those two weren't even in the same conversation, and now Lululemon is way, way ahead. I think Lululemon's market cap something like 25 million in Under Armour's.
No, their market cap's 57 billion. Under Armour under B. four. Yeah.
Yeah. B, yeah. Not million. Sorry. Yeah. Substantial difference between the two, but it's funny to see that Under Armour had a gigantic lead and could have invested in a lot of these different things and sat on it. I was actually really interested to see where Stephanie took the brand, and it seemed like she had a really big plan that was really starting to kind of turn things around. I think it's really interesting to bring in somebody that's completely outside of sports, but it's also the way that I think she thought about, you know, consumers of the brand was in more of a membership kind of way. And if you think about brand loyalty of like wearing Under Armour, how do you build that relationship between the people who are buying your stuff and how they care about the brand? That's always been a problem. Like at Red Bull, it's the same thing. People would say, oh, I love your brand, but I don't like your product. Probably it was the other way around for Under Armour. Like, I like your product, but like the brand, I don't know. And so solving for that, probably the membership kind of Marriott's, you know, Bonvoy model may have actually made a lot of sense. It seemed like a lot of the stuff that she was putting in place was going to pay off long term. But I also saw some stuff like Kevin Plank kept his office inside Under Armour, and it was right next to hers. And that's never good.
It's like that's Bob just Iger like undermining, apparently. The other like, high profile CEO is returning to his job.
I wouldn't feel like I was set up for success if the person who had my job had the office next to me afterwards. That just seems like a recipe for disaster. So, you know, Kevin Plank said something like, I learned a lot about not being CEO when I was out, and I want to, you know, bring that back here. Really curious to see how much of her plans he follows through and what he scraps. It's going to, you know, time is only going to tell. Like, did he learn enough in his absence, or not even absence, but yeah, I don't know. It'll be really interesting.
I mean, this is a turnaround job, and who better than the founder and the creator of the brand to turn it around and bring it back to glory? Like, it does take sort of that religious commitment to something that founders embody in order to really bring it back. But, you know, the reason why I thought this was an interesting thing for the two of us to discuss is, you know, we're talking about sort of the business of outdoor, right? And Under Armour has, I think, had their most success in team sports and focusing on that consumer. And I wonder, going back to what we just said about Lululemon, if losing focus on that by chasing Nike, trying to get market share in running and in athleisure and in outdoor. We remember they were very successful in the hunting category to start. I think they probably still do pretty well in that market too. You know, to what extent that super rapid exponential growth curve they were on tempted them to invest into categories where they weren't prepared to speak in an authentic way to a consumer. And then they get overstretched. They lose focus on, I mean, like you said, they had an opportunity. Athleisure would have been the easiest thing for them to pivot into, especially coming from the types of products that they were producing to begin with. They miss that. A competitor steps in, and now they're sort of in a tough position of like, how do you refocus on a customer that you can actually speak to in an authentic way? Because now they are a really broad-based consumer performance brand, but they didn't only miss on athleisure, they sort of missed on super shoes too, you know? So if you think about the footwear products now that Nike and Adidas and Asics and Brooks and Saucony and stuff are all putting out, like, I don't remember seeing somebody wear an Under Armour carbon plated super shoe. I think they may have an option, but it's doubtful that it's moving volume. So anyway, I just thought it was interesting as a brand thought experiment for us of like, when is it good to grow and expand? And when is it good to just double down on what's working?
It's interesting that you kind of talked about the turnaround of Under Armour, because the person who's now back in charge is the person that put him in that spot in the first place. And that's what makes me nervous. It looked like they were on the verge of a turnaround. And did they just like cut it off? And now, you know, are they just returning to the old ways, which didn't work? Really interesting. And one thing that Under Armour did a long time ago, they built an office in Portland, Oregon, and people were freaking out at the time. I lived here, well, still live here, but like, I remember that time in Portland where friends at Nike and Adidas were like, oh no, they're going to come take all of our best talent. They're going to try to eat our lunch. This is not going to be good for either one of the two larger brands. And obviously there's other, you know, Columbia's here and everybody too, but people thought that that was going to be a huge inflection point for Under Armour. And I don't know, I've driven by it recently and it looks pretty quiet in there. So it'd be interesting to see if they go back to their roots. Do they double down on that? Do they find new ways? It doesn't seem like focus is a big strong suit for the people that have been there, or for Kevin specifically. They've been doing all these different things. And is that the thing that he learned when he was out that he needs to put the effort in? Because yeah, being app developers, probably not their core competency. They learned that lesson the hard way. Going after all these different sports. Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see where this whole thing goes.
So interesting. The stock is down 85% from the all-time high. I'm sure they've got shareholders breathing down their neck, even if Kevin Plank is 65% voting power on the board. Well, it'll be interesting to follow. Maybe we'll provide intermittent updates as quarterly results get posted from Under Armour, but an interesting piece of news in the industry that came down this week. Lutzi, let's finish with our closing segment. So to our listeners here, we're sort of moving forward with this concept. The working title for it is brand product content. So Lutzi and I have the assignment each and every week, each and every episode, to highlight something that we saw that's either related to a brand, related to a product, or a cool piece of content that we watched, listened to, read during that week to hopefully leave you, our listeners, with something to go check out. Lutzi, you want to get us started?
Sure. I'm going all in on content because that's my shtick. So Substack has been making a big play for sports creators lately. And Substack, if you're not familiar, is a media platform where it's very similar to like a Medium or any of these other kind of blogging platforms, but it also functions like a newsletter. And you'll be able to read the Second Nature newsletter this week, right? But it's a place where you can go to find out what a lot of people are writing about it. And people are writing full-on newsletters like we do. People are writing blog entry style things. There's all kinds of different ways to do it. And there's podcasts that are now hosted there. There's all these different things. And it's every category you could possibly imagine, from finance to, you know, writing to sports to politics, you know, you name it. There's a ton of different creators there, and there's a big community on Substack. But what's been happening recently is that they have someone who's in charge of sports specifically and building a community of sports creators, inviting them in, helping bring their content to the Substack platform and also connecting all the sports creators together into sort of like this office hours thing. It's going to be really interesting to see, because it seems like every other platform, you know, from Instagram, LinkedIn, X, all these places, it's kind of like nobody really knows what's going on from day to day. And Substack seems like a pretty untouched, like it hasn't gotten messy yet. There's just everybody's there for sort of the right reason. Communities are forming there. People are getting fired up, and it's a lot more raw and real take from people in the sports and other categories. So it's watching what's going to happen with sports content moving away from the legacy media, like you were talking about, and having these writers or content creators coming to their own platform like Substack. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah. I have loved following that brand. I've listened to a million podcasts with their founder. I think his name's Chris Best, but a really interesting new age publishing platform. I read and subscribe to a bunch of different podcasts. And what a perfect selection for you for episode one, Lutzi. So we got to tell our listeners, are we using secondnature.media?
I think so.
Go to secondnature.media, put your email in, and subscribe to our newsletter, where we're going to be covering the business of outdoor action and endurance sports in the written form, in addition to this audio-based podcast. My selection is... Go ahead.
Oh, I'm really excited to do this newsletter, because it's a good way to like pull it all together and share it in sort of a different medium. You and I have both been doing our own newsletters for such a long time, and we've been learning a lot in the process, and we've been sharing some information back and forth as we kind of build our collective media empires, but it'd be fun to collaborate on a newsletter.
Yeah, heck yeah. So go subscribe. All right, so my brand product content contribution this week is a brand. It's a brand called Roa Hiking, R-O-A. Check them out on Instagram, Lutzi. I was reading a report that I'm hopeful that we're going to do an episode around here in the near future that came from High Snobiety, which is a really interesting publication that focuses on product and culture and innovation and things like that. And they did a really cool report on sort of the intersection of outdoor and fashion. And they spoke a lot about this brand, Roa Hiking. And so if you look them up on Instagram, I've never touched a single one of their products, but they're sort of like the Satisfy Running of the hiking world, sort of like a fashion-oriented hiking brand. And I just felt like this was a really interesting example of a brand and an operating team seeing a very clear white space in a market, even if it's a very small white space. Like, how many people are going hiking who really care about how fashionable they look? And it may not be a lot of people, but those people do exist. And you know how you get them to become lifelong super fans of yours is to give them a product like they want, and to tell them stories and give them content and a brand that they'd be proud to wear and proud to consume. So go check out Roa Hiking. I think it's just an interesting brand, and I'm excited to follow them in the years to come.
This is fascinating. And I saw the High Snobiety article about quiet outdoor as a trend. And it's funny, because part of what they had to say in the article was just like, actually most outdoor brands are already doing this understated logo thing already, but like fashion is getting excited about understated logos. And this is kind of funny. I didn't realize that there were so many outdoor companies represented in like these big fashion shows where they took like an Arc'teryx jacket and turned it into a dress or whatever else. It's interesting to see.
Yeah.
But yeah, being fashionable outdoors, I mean, my entire life, it was all about function. And, it was only until recently that I had a pair of neon orange shoes. So that's my fashion statement,
I guess. Lutzi, episode one in the bank. Any closing comments for our listeners here?
This is fun. And this is exactly the stuff that you and I talk on the phone about all the time, just breaking it all down. So it's cool to be able to actually share this with someone else. I hope people find this really interesting, and really excited for where I think we're going to take this and some of the other stuff that you and I are working on. It's a good first attempt.
Felt great, buddy. So to our listening audience, make sure you hit the subscribe button. Go over to, if you're listening to this in the Free Trail feed, make sure you go over to the Second Nature feed and hit the subscribe button. Also go to secondnature.media, type in your email address, make sure you get on the list. Aaron and I have been talking about doing this for at least a year now, and we're finally getting it going. And we have huge plans. So again, next week, we're going to go into some of those plans. We're going to tell you a little bit more about what Second Nature is, what the vision is. Hopefully, this was a good teaser and an early taste to sort of give you a sense of the vibe that we're going for. Appreciate everybody listening. We'll see you next time.